You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today, I continue my exit interviews, breaking down each player's strengths and weaknesses, and of course, looking ahead at what happens with them next season. Make sure to check out previous episodes if you haven't already, and please leave a review about the show. If you're familiar with other Miami Heat podcasts, you probably know my guest on today's show. It's his first time on the podcast officially, of Five Reasons Sports. It's Alex Toledo. How are you doing, man?
Doing all right, man. This is it's kind of my first time, but you know, we've done the Heat Beat crossover shows and all that, and I was, you know, so it's maybe not my first time, but I'm a fan, man. It's good to be here.
I appreciate that. Obviously you're doing great work over with Five Reasons Sports. We all know you from there. That's officially, this is your first time on this show as a member of Five Reasons, so that's why it's a little bit different. But you know, everybody gets a promotion, and speaking of promotions, we're talking about Bam Adebayo. It was his third full season in the NBA, and after starting a total of 47 games in his first two seasons, he was promoted to the starting lineup, and he responded with his first All-Star selection, being named to the All-Defensive Team, and at times in the playoffs, establishing himself as Miami's best and probably their most consistent player. We have to dedicate at least some time to talking about his strengths, but that could go on forever, because the reality is Bam has emerged as a player who just does everything well. And it's one of the more interesting conversations on NBA Twitter for people who don't really watch the game or perhaps watch the Heat as much, to discount everything that he's done. But the reality is that he's always been so impactful. He makes so many smart plays. He does everything. He is the offensive and defensive hub for this team. And he is what's made this team so successful throughout most of the season. Yes, everybody contributed. Jimmy, Tyler here are gone. Everybody had their fair share of making a positive impact. But without Bam, this team is never as strong as it is. And I think that's why he is probably Miami's best player. It's something we heard Jimmy Butler say a number of times in that Heat locker room.
Yeah, man, I'm with you there. I've been, you're preaching to the choir right now. I've been saying that all year, you know, with five on the floor, just that he's kind of been, you know, 1A and 1B with Jimmy, depending on, you know, who you prefer. But I just think they're both equally as important, more or less, to the team success and to, you know, the team that they were this year. And going forward, it's just, I mean, there's nothing more you could say about Bam, you know, everything you just said right now. The fact that he was able to have the production of somebody who could be your best player of a finals team, and obviously, you know, that doesn't happen without Jimmy Butler. We know that Jimmy also helped Bam get to this level. But just the fact that he's there now so quickly in his first year as a starter, the guy is just so ahead of schedule, and he gave you legitimate top 20 player production, yeah, especially against the Celtics. But just a playoff run, like taking another leap like that, like that's exactly what you want to see from a young star. Doing it in his first year, I understand that, you know, it's the bubble. There's no crowds. Like, I'm sure that has to factor in a little bit to players' performances and why guys were just shooting so hot. But at the end of the day, like, he stepped up. There's no doubt about it. And even though he struggled in the Lakers series, we know he was hurt. And just at the end of the day, you can't be anything but extremely positive about Bam and his development over the past year.
I don't think I've gotten your take on it. I don't know if you've mentioned it necessarily via Twitter, and I haven't heard you say anything on the show. But what's your stance on whether or not, if Bam had been healthy, and obviously if Bam and both Goran had been healthy, what would their chances have been like against the finals, against the Lakers rather, in the finals?
I mean, if the injuries never happened, I had picked the Heat in seven. Picked the Heat in seven. I'm not 100% sure that they would have won in seven. I think it would have gone to seven. And even if they would have lost in six, I think, like, you know, those first two games, like, wouldn't have happened, right? I think we would have got, like, a lot, like, what the rest of the series was in those first two games as well. I thought every game was going to be like that. And I think that's kind of what we were robbed of. But at the end of the day, I'm glad, you know, they got to six. The injuries really took them out. But I do think that they could have won if those guys were healthy. I'm not going to be, you know, be on here acting like it would have been. I'm not going to act like Rockets fans when, you know, Chris Paul went down, and they're just going to keep talking about how we would have beat the Warriors. We would have beat the Warriors. You know, I'm going to give it to the team that won, and the team that has LeBron James and Anthony Davis, they absolutely deserve to win. But the Heat would have been right there, man. I know they would have. They were playing like it. And honestly, the matchups, there was a lot of them that I think would have gone their way a lot more if those guys were healthy.
It's interesting because people have, again, discredited what Bam and Goran did because they were getting beat so badly in the first game of the finals. And of course, we all know Bam was in foul trouble early on, and that completely changed the complexion of that game. And then from that point, then Goran gets hurt almost minutes later and both of them are out, and the Heat were just reeling from that point forward. Like, they didn't know what to do with two of their starters missing from the floor. And it's, you know, not only that, but two incredibly productive and important players to their success. They bounced back in the second half of game two. They really gave them a run from that point forward. They won games three and five, obviously. I don't know. I just, it's still tough for me to kind of go over it. I'm not a Rockets fan necessarily. I really do think Miami would have beat them. I'm pretty confident in that.
I don't hate it whatsoever. Like, that is how I feel. But I just don't want to be, you know, all the way into that, right? Like, I want to be like, well, you know, we weren't even here. They weren't even supposed to be there to begin with. So that's why I'm just like, well, they took it to six with Bam and Goran being so messed up and everybody thinking that they were first, second round team. And something that I've said on Five on the Floor all year is I remember when so many people had them as the seventh or eighth seed coming into the season. I couldn't believe it. But you know, they got to the finals, man. They got two wins away from the title, even with all those injuries. Like, I'm sorry. They should not have taken it to six without Bam and Goran. Like, those guys were there. That was the big three for them during the playoff run. Like, we know how important Duncan Robinson was, and I'm not somebody who's going to trash Duncan's playoff performance whatsoever. I think his impact was still there, even when he wasn't hitting all the threes. Yeah. But the big three was Jimmy, Bam, and Goran. And they lost two of the three. And it's just like, Bam is the anchor to your defense and is just doing so much for you on offense. We already know what Goran does for you on offense, and he stepped it up to another level where, frankly, I don't know if they get to the finals without Goran playing at that level throughout the whole time.
Right.
And I think it's just like, you know, they lost to both of them, and that's just such a hard, tough matchup when you lose Bam, like, against a team like that. Like, it is, frankly, amazing that they were able to pull out two games. We know a lot of it had to do with Jimmy Butler. But again, the whole team is ahead of schedule.
Yeah. And speaking of that, if you had to rate what's taken more of a leap, is it Bam's defense or Bam's offense? Because we've known that while his 1 year in Kentucky didn't really highlight what he could do as a passer, he had flashes of that ability to create on offense in his first couple of seasons. He just was kind of stuck on the bench behind Hassan Whiteside. He really didn't get the opportunity to be the hub of the offense. Now, of course, now we're seeing it. But his defense has been so phenomenal too. If you had to guess, which is better, his offense or his defense?
So I would say right now he's ahead in defense, but I was more impressed by his leap on offense this year. Because I think I was already expecting everything that came with the defense. I was expecting a lot from him.
Yeah.
And like, honestly, him and Jimmy were carrying the defense so much before they pulled out that trade. And even afterwards, because we know the team, you know, they didn't just magically start winning games after they made that trade for Iguodala and Crowder. It took a while before it started working, but you know, but when it was mostly a team of Jimmy and Bam carrying a bunch of mediocre or worse defenders, I think they were just putting in so much of the work to keep them above average or, you know, right there in the middle of the pack. And, you know, Zach Lowe kind of put it like that once. And I thought that was really the best way to describe it. Cause it's like Jimmy and Bam are covering up all the mistakes, but specifically Bam. And then I think you saw that to another degree in the playoffs, especially against the Celtics, where he's like cleaning up all the mistakes. And every time somebody gets beat, he's there to, you know, he's there to help, or he's there at the back line, or he's wherever, you know, the team needs him to be. I think he's just like the ultimate mistake cleaner, and
yeah,
he's just going to be wherever you need him to be. And it's a whole different level, man. And the offense again is what surprises me though, because I know that we saw those flashes last year, but to really run your offense through him all season and for it to be as good as it was, you know, we got to give it to Spo for seeing the vision of like, okay, we're going to get Jimmy and Bam in a motion offense surrounded by a bunch of shooters that people don't really know about. And Spo put them all in the right place, whether it's, you know, Kendrick Nunn and Myers Leonard in the starting lineup. And everybody probably questioned that at the beginning. It's like, why are they starting? Right. These aren't, you know, two of your five best players. And to just see Duncan Robinson there, and you know, it ended up working out. Like, the vision is there now. Everybody sees it now. They got to the finals with it. And I think, you know, it's not like they don't do that without Bam doing what he does on offense. And even though he has another leap he could make on offense, I don't even know how much better he needs to get. Like, I just think he's going to develop his range a little bit more. And that's something that we expect. But even then, it's just like the player that he is right now, just getting incrementally better over the next few seasons as he goes into his prime, I think is a top 25 player and maybe better.
Well, that's a perfect segue, because Bam, unfortunately, does have some weaknesses to his game, and Alex and I will break those down next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. At some point in the day, you're bound to hit a wall. Mine usually hits me in the early evening when I'm tired from work. and after a long day of playing with my son. But whatever your wall is, whenever it is, Built Go is the solution. It's the healthy replacement to energy drinks without any of the fake additives, just natural ingredients that last. Built Go comes in 1.5-ounce packages that are easy to carry whenever your wall hits you, at a meeting, at work, or to power through your workout. Just put it in your pocket and get through your day. It's the best workout gel on the market, and it comes in three delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. So how does Built Go work so well? It combines energy gel with collagen protein that gets absorbed into your system quickly using vitamins, nutrients, honey, and just a kick of caffeine to help you going strong while strengthening joints, soft tissues, hair, and skin. So you feel good and you look good too. Visit BuiltGo.com and use the promo code LOCKED and you'll get 30% off your next order. So use the promo code LOCKED for 30% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. Stay up to date on the latest roster changes, rumors, and more by subscribing to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and always get the latest episodes by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. So it seems like that's been the knock on Bam for a while. You hinted at it in the first segment, and clearly he does need to expand his range a little bit. Most of his work, obviously around the paint, doesn't have much touch there, unfortunately. Certainly no back to the basket game whatsoever. He is not that type of center where he's going to be able to power through. Even I think in the Bucks series where it really stood out, where he kept getting switches with a George Hill or a smaller defender on him, and he didn't seem to know what to do in those kinds of situations. He would often lead to an offensive foul. That was somewhat unfortunate to have that weakness in his game pinpointed that way. At the same time, I think he does need to be a lot more aggressive. I'll never forget being able to interview Chris Bosh last summer and talking specifically about that for Bam, the sky was a limit, but that he just needed to be more aggressive, more consistent in looking for his shot first and foremost. It wasn't something that was part of him, because Bam is just a guy who likes getting others involved. He's so good at passing and creating offense for others, but there are times when he needs to be more aggressive. And I think that game against the Washington Wizards in March, right before the hiatus took place, where he was electric in the fourth quarter and was responsible for all their points, either by creating offense or for looking for his own shot. And that's the kind of version we need from him more consistently. And we didn't see it. We saw it an occasion during the playoffs, but we didn't see it enough during the regular season. And that, to me, is his most glaring weakness.
See, that's something that we also talked about at different times throughout the season. And then it kind of got brought up again as he was thriving, especially in the Celtics series after that game six, where he just went crazy. I think game six was like the, the final evolution of that Wizards game that he had that you were just talking about. Like, to me, and I think this is why you get a lot of those responses from Spo and Bam, when they kind of get a little bit, sensitive when talking about whether Bam needs to be more aggressive or not.
Yeah.
I think both of them are on the same page in the sense that it's different now. Like, I think I would have agreed with you before. I am agreeing with you that he should be more aggressive, because I think he can be an even better player. But also, the team that they were this year, the whole motion offense thing where they're just kind of constantly making reads,
yeah,
I think just makes it a lot easier for him to play his game. And I think that was also intentional by Spo to kind of not turn Bam into somebody he is, or at least not rush him into there. And I think he's kind of made strides along the season, especially, and I think you saw them put together in the playoff run. And again, this is his first year starting, and he took multiple leaps throughout the season. Obviously, like, I would say multiple small leaps. But at the end of the day, I'm just really impressed by the leaps that he did take, even regarding his aggression. And I think it went away some in the finals, obviously, because he had the injury bug and it was a tough matchup in general. But I was really impressed, man. And also, you said something about his touch. I think that's gotten better since he got into the league. I think he really struggled with that when he first came in. Not that he had no touch, just that it was kind of awkward. He struggled with timing sometimes and couldn't really put together stretches of scoring. Whereas now, I mean, he's giving you 16 or more in pretty much every game. And he does it pretty easily without even having to, really look for his bucket that much. That's why I think, the upside is there for him to do that whenever the team needs him to, whenever, schematically it requires him to do so. Like, when a team is overplaying Duncan Robinson dribble handoff and they're sending a second guy at him, and he gets that little roll. And from there, Bam either makes the pass or he's going to try to look to score if everything else breaks down. But that's why I think for Bam right now, that scoring aspect is kind of last for him, in the sense that we all know he could be better at it. We all know he could shoot better, but the offense runs better, frankly, when they're running their thing. And I think, like, whether it's Bam shooting or not, I think, like, I trust them to make the right decisions. And I'm talking about on the floor, whether it's to, you know, it's always about making reads to me.
So do you think this is by design then? You think Spo and Bam and everybody else in that starting lineup is like, you know what, it works better if Bam is just looking to get everybody else going and engaged rather than him being aggressive and looking for his shot? You really do think that?
100%. I think that's why they built the team the way they did. And I'm not talking about roster building necessarily, but just the way that Spo put together the rotation and the way that they played on the floor, their style of play. You know, they were the best three-point shooting team all year. And I just think the motion was there the whole time. And I know I keep saying that, but it's just like I'm trying to categorize everything that they do on the floor that's complicated into one word, which, and everybody understands what a motion offense is more or less. And I just think right. That's pretty much the best way to describe what it is that they do. And I just like Bam at the end of the day, I wouldn't be surprised if Bam, Jimmy, and Tyler Hero are all averaging like 18 or 19 points a game next season or right around there, you know, depending on what happens this offseason. But if the team is more or less the same, I think they're all going to be putting up similar scoring averages, given that if Tyler Hero starts, by the way. I think that's the asterisk there. I don't think he'll be able to get there if he's coming off the bench again. But I do think that, like, that part to me is not necessarily a pressing situation for Bam. I think it's something that he's going to keep getting better at. He's going to keep, you know, improving along the margins as far as shooting and the touch and post finishing and all of that. But I've actually been really impressed with it, man. Like, I just think they're better off doing what they do right now. Like, I love the shooting core that they have around the team. I just think it's really impressive. And the fact that they were the best shooting team all year, I think you got to keep that. And, you know, whenever they overplay on those, because now everybody knows what's going on with the Heat and what they're trying to run, I think that's where Bam's really got to improve. It's like, okay, like you said, and I thought it was a really good point, is, you know, when he gets a smaller guy matched up onto him, that's where I think he honestly has to improve even more than the range, because I think that's something that teams are going to try to use on him more going into the playoffs. When teams start to, you know, make Bam a scorer, he's got to really take advantage of smaller matchups, whether it's a wing or a guard or just a smaller big. He's got to be able to, you know, back him down and not get an offensive foul, at the very least know to flow back into a pick and roll and make sure that you've got the small guarding the big as he rolls to the rims, make it a little bit more comfortable for him that way. You know, and either you're forcing help and he's making the pass or he scores on the roll. I think they just got to make it easier for him to take advantage of those matchups, because it's really annoying to watch him, you know, like a clear mismatch of somebody that I know he could score on. Right. But it's just a little bit of hesitation. But again, I just think it's like stuff that he's going to get marginally better at as more reps start coming. And I think, like I said earlier, like more teams know what's going on with the Heat now. And I bet you, I would bet a lot of money that more teams are going to try to make Bam a score going forward. And maybe not in the regular season, because there's not a lot of that schematic stuff going on as much, but definitely in the playoffs.
Yeah. Look, I almost feel like, to me, I'm playing somewhat of a devil's advocate here. I know the nature of these shows has to focus on the good, the bad, and what happens next. At the same time, I mean, personally, I do believe he is advancing at a very high level. I don't think there's any denying that. He's clearly a very, very good player. Now, there are still, though, moments where, particularly on offense, where there seems to be something missing. And it's minimizing it by saying that he's not aggressive, but there are moments there, even in that offense, where Duncan, if Duncan is shut down and he has somebody attached to him, like Wes Matthews in the Bucks series, and then all of a sudden the offense stagnates a little bit because Bam's 19 to 20 feet away from the rim and he's not quite sure what to do. People aren't cutting the way they were because they have individual defensive matchups that might limit that motion that you keep hinting at. And so for Bam, he needs to be able to let it fly. To his credit, he did. In a recent episode, I did talk about that. His offense from the mid-range during the playoff bubble was incredible, like a very high level. And I think that's the next evolution for him. We've already seen grainy footage of him from the American Airlines Arena taking threes. And I think we all get hyped up about it because we think that that's the next step for him. And I do think he'll reach that. But if you had to pinpoint a weakness in this past season, it was that. Still, I know I'm just nitpicking here. The reality is Bam is a very, very good player. I mean, look, I want him to be more aggressive, but I know that he's going to get there. And I have no doubt that he's going to continue to be a very consistent and solid player because he does have a good shooting stroke. Like even last year when Wes and I were talking about what was missing in Bam's game and following that interview with Bosch and talking about him expanding his range a little bit, we broke it down. Like his shooting touch is very, very nice. Like he has a pretty decent stroke.
Well, and you look at the free throw shooting too, and it's the same thing.
Yeah.
All the signs are there.
Yeah, and he's shooting at a high level too. Like, he's getting to the line enough. I think he's shown some growth there. I think now that he's an all-star, as he's continuing to develop and get more cachet around the league, I think a lot of people will start to understand that he's going to get those calls. And we saw an uptick in that in the playoffs as well. So I think he's on pace. I think he's certainly going to get a lot better. But Pat Riley has some thoughts about Bam's evolution, and we'll talk about that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockdownheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLAHeat. So here's the part of the show where, as a front office, we look ahead to what Bam could possibly do to evolve his game. We talked about it in the first couple segments, but of course, none other than Pat Riley had some thoughts about it in his post-game presser a couple weeks ago. I had the good fortune of being able to ask Mr. Riley about Bam and what he foresaw as his next step, and this is Riley's response. He's a multifaceted player right now, and his game needs to expand, and it will expand because he is a player that's willing to work at it. We know what he can do, and I don't think Eric Spoelstra would have put him in the situations as the main trigger man in our offense as a point center unless he had great confidence in his ability to handle the ball and make plays as a passer. He didn't do that his rookie year. He didn't do half the things that he does now, and that's just through steady work and growth, development, and confidence. Bam will practice, and I think he will become better in all facets of the game. So that's pretty clear as far as what Riley perceives as Bam's future with this franchise. He's spoken about it before. He is the cornerstone. As great as Jimmy has aligned perfectly with Miami's development and championship goals and aspirations, and of course, being as close to an embodiment of the Heat culture, especially from an outsider's perspective, Bam is continuing to grow. And Riley, again, in that same response, talked about Bam loving the work, the practice, practice, practice. That was his quote about Bam continuing to develop and everything like that. So if it was the front office meeting with Bam at the end of these exit interviews, I don't think there'd be much they have to say as far as what their expectations for him next season, because they already have a strong belief that Bam is going to continue to get better. And we saw that in that grainy footage that I referred to before. Like, it was a couple weeks, maybe even 9 days after the finals loss, and Bam, despite the injury, despite everything that he suffered, despite the mental hardship of being in the Orlando bubble for over 3 months, he's back at it. He's back at the grind. Yep. This is unbelievable. Like, to have a 23-year-old player who loves the work, the dedication as much as Adebayo does, and to have him on this roster, I can't believe, I'm still shocked to this day that there are people who watch basketball, and I know this is NBA Twitter and it's a lot of BS, but to discount what he does because he's so competent and so dedicated, and he is a bright future as far as the league stars are concerned.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Like, I think, I mean, who doesn't love some grainy footage? I was glad to see him taking some jumpers after the finals were over, like you said, after the bubble and after going through the injury stuff, like in the middle of the finals, which I'm sure, like, just must have done something to him. I can't imagine how, like, heartbroken or whatever the word is for what him and Goran were feeling at the time, not being able to play and contribute. And after all that work they put in through the bubble, like, for him to be right back out there, I'm with you, man. Like, that's – he's showing the signs of somebody that you just – you don't move that guy. You make sure that guy does not leave. You make him happy because that guy loves the game. And he's – the production that he's given you so far in his first year as a starter, like, it's really unbelievable. I think not even the most optimistic Heat fan was expecting this. And you know, maybe to some people it'll sound a little bit hyperbolic what I'm saying. But at the end of the day, I'm really all in on Bam and the type of production he gave and that being his baseline going forward. And I'm talking about the Bam that we saw in the playoffs, not necessarily game six Bam, but just kind of the average game to game production that he was giving you. I'm expecting that next season for throughout the season. And I expect him to, you know, really up. I think there should be some pressure on him to kind of up his scoring game in the playoffs next season. But I just think that's something that's going to, you know, like, I don't think the pressure should be on in the regular season for that, just because I think, you know, they'll be able to have a top 10 offense without him having to really up his scoring too much. Like I said, he's going to be around 17, 18 points a game. I wouldn't be surprised. But I think, like, Riley saying there, you know, he's going to get better and he will get better. I like that. I think they're all on the same page. I think, like you said, Bam is all about the work. Yes. And I know that Bam's not looking at that and taking that negatively in any light. Like, I just know it. I know that he's looking at like, okay, this team really believes in me. And you know, Pat was trying to make sure in that press conference as well that he was saying, yeah, we're gonna pay Bam. Like, we're gonna make sure to make Bam happy because that guy is a cornerstone. And I think Pat was impressed with what Spo turned Bam into in his first year starting. And again, like, what was he playing before? Like 20 minutes a game?
Yeah, if even. Yeah, I mean,
look ridiculous. How we're talking about him now. Yeah, like it's just unbelievable that the vision that Spo had in the beginning of the year to stick to that, and the way that it worked out, where it's just like, yeah, it's gonna be Jimmy and Bam surrounded by, you know, a bunch of guys who could play off of them, and then we've got a bench lineup with guys who can kind of do their own thing, and you know what I'm saying? Like, I just think there was a lot of vision behind it, and Spo knew all along what Bam could be. And Bam is kind of realizing that a lot quicker than I think we expected. Like, I think before the season, we expected him to be a 15-10-5 guy. And that's obviously a really good player with great defense. And he's more than that now. Like, I think he's somebody who's going to give you baseline, you know, 17-11-6. He's going to give you all NBA defense. And he's gonna step up when it matters most.
Yeah, I don't think I went into the season, or prior to the Hassan Whiteside trade, I don't really think I had those kind of realistic expectations about Bam being able to start right away and make that kind of incredible contributions, because obviously Whiteside with his contract, we knew he was going to be there on this team. And I didn't think that the front office would be able to move him. Then we saw the lineups with Bam and Kelly Olynyk, how well they worked. And, you know, there was the potential there for him to be a competent backup player. But then the trade for Whiteside happens. It's incredible. It frees up Adebayo, and it's just for him to evolve on the fly as well as he did. Like last season,
they knew what they had for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there were moments there when Bam's motor would be such a refreshing change of pace from Hassan Whiteside languishing out on the court and just dragging ass constantly. Like, it was such a very different feel to when Bam Adebayo was out there giving you his all. Like, I know it's cliche as hell, but that guy, his motor does not stop. Like, that is just something, you and I watch him all the time. He's constantly moving, and
that's
everything
that
he does. Yeah, absolutely. It's
having that type of motor is a skill to me. Like, I don't think that's why Victor Oladipo got taken number two. Like, I don't know why that just sticks in my head. I remember like Oladipo getting taken number two in the 2013 draft. I mean, that weird draft where Anthony Bennett was taken number one. But I remember Oladipo, the motor. And you just see it like with guys like that, like just in general, and guys like Bam, who are just constantly just giving it their all out there, constantly hustling and moving around and trying to be in all the spots and just, you know, being a pest out there and knowing how to use their athletic abilities. And you know, because you see guys like Andrew Wiggins, who are the opposite of that, where everybody, remember when he was the next LeBron when he was in high school? Just because he had, you know, the great athletic abilities and could dunk on people and, you know, just actually knowing how to use it. That's a skill, man. Like, Bam has all of it. Like, I think Bam is extremely coordinated and knows how to use his crazy athletic ability. And he's just, I think he really is one of one. The type of guy that he is right now, there's going to be, you know, he's going to be in his own archetype now. I think
he's not quite Miles Turner, but he's up there.
Okay. Not quite. Who is it? Mason Plumlee?
Mason Plumlee. He's no Daniel Tice, but he's getting to that point. Hopefully he can show a little bit more consistency.
Yeah. Maybe Popovich will keep him next time.
So anyway, obviously the contract, you kind of hinted at it, as far as Riley signing him, I don't know where that's going to stand. I think whatever it happens, it's because Bam has worked in full agreement with the front office. Like, if he doesn't sign the extension, it's because he knows big things are in the horizon next year. And if he does, it's because he wants to just get paid right away. And either way, the front office is happy with that. They want to lock him up. I understand that he wants to get paid, because you never know what could happen. And so I don't even want to broach that subject, because we'll see how it plays out at some point over the next 4 weeks of the offseason, however that lasts. And at the same time, there are questions, though, about who Bam will be playing alongside. And I talked about it in a recent exit interview about Jay Crowder. And I don't think Jay re-signs with his team. I think he moves on. I think Myers also moves on.
Whoa, that's a take.
Oh, are you serious? I think both of them are gone, to be honest with you. Like, I think
Not even Myers. I think the Myers thing was kind of obvious given the way his role went. And
yeah,
like, I would have been fine with Myers re-signing if he took like the biannual exception or the veterans minimum or something. But you know, that comment about wanting to play 25 minutes a game is kind of damning. It's gonna be tough to find that role, I think, other than playing on one of these bad teams. But the take to me was Crowder. It really seems like they're in on, you know, bringing back Goron and Crowder. I think They should bring him back. And I think it's in there. I just think they won't be able to do better than him, given that they have his bird rights. So they I don't think he gets in the way of acquiring somebody else, unless it's a bigger name, right? Like, unless it's something else. But as far as the other veterans out there on the market, I think it would be in their best interest to keep Crowder. You think he leaves because of his own, like he wants to, he wants, he gets paid by somebody else?
His comments postseason were, you know, that he wants that stability, and that stood out. And, you know, I talked about it in this recent exit interview. He got traded from Boston to Cleveland to Utah to Memphis to Miami, all under the same deal, and he was still getting paid. That's the kind of stability that a contract like that offers. You can't have that on a one-year deal. And I keep bringing up the fact that he was teammates with Isaiah Thomas when he got hurt, but it stands out. Like, I mean, seeing Thomas be an all-star level player, then get hurt and then get screwed over by the Celtics. Like, I just don't, I don't think you can afford to take that chance, you know? And I think, go ahead.
I think that's a good point, especially because Isaiah Thomas thing, like, my God, what a terrible, that's a terrible example.
Yeah, backing up the Brinks truck, you know, he was going to get paid. He deserved it. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, injuries took a toll on him.
I may attribute that more to Danny Ainge than but on a serious note, the Crowder thing is interesting to me because I do think that's a good point. It's obviously, it's just like, who is he going to sign with, right? I think it's tough when you look at the teams out there with cap room for him to leave and go get paid by one of them. I guess the real threat is a winning team offers him the mid-level exception on a multi-year deal, which again, I don't know if that's going to happen because I know a lot of teams are, you know, holding off for free agency, and I don't know exactly how they want to spend their money. I do think he would be worth that. But it's just tough to me because I don't think like him taking a 1-year deal would necessarily take him out of money. I think he would basically give you more or less the same production that he gave the Heat this season.
Okay. How about this though? My point with that was, what if Crowder goes back to regressing to the mean and he shoots, you know, high 20s from 3-point range? You know, he's not even a starter. I don't think you can afford to start him at the four alongside Bam. Like that was great to break out in the playoffs. I just don't think that's something you can do for 72 regular season games. And if that's the case, his numbers are all going to, you know, take a plunge, and he's not going to be the same kind of player he was over the last 30 games of the postseason. And after his trade acquisition, does he get paid? Like, does Miami go, you know, I'm glad you took a chance. I'd like to make good and you know, reimburse you for taking a chance. But at the same time, we can't afford to pay you much because your production is dwindling. You're 31, 32 years old now. We can't keep paying you. Like, I mean, that's what happens. Look, it's a business. We hate to see it. Crowder was such a good part of this past run. He's fun to talk to, fun. He gave great energy, great effort. But if he's going to get a 3-year deal somewhere else, and I don't know where that is, I have no idea where that might be, he'll take it. And that, to me, that's just the reality. So you kind of said it before, Crowder is the first best option as far as playing alongside Bam. If there was another player there, if Crowder leaves or they decide not to sign him because he wants a long-term deal, who do you think is the best complement to Adebayo? Is Adebayo at the four or at the five in the regular season the way that the team moves forward?
Honestly, it just depends on who they go after. Because, you know, they've been, you know, we've seen the rumors of guys who they're interested in going after this offseason. And like, I don't think Jeremy Grant is actually going to happen. I don't really consider that realistic. I think he's going to get paid. Like, he's a younger guy who hasn't really made that much money in the league yet. And he really balled out for the Nuggets. I wouldn't be surprised if he just re-signed with them or if he got paid by another team. But to me, like, you know, Ibaka would obviously be an awesome fit. I think it's going to be really tough to actually try to get him, especially now that, you know, Gasol from the Raptors are committed to playing in Spain or whatever. So they're going to have money to pay Van Vliet and to retain Ibaka for a 1-year deal if he chooses to do that on like a $19 million a year deal, which I think is what people are speculating that type of payment would be. And like, if that doesn't happen, I could see him taking the mid-level. I guess he could choose Miami. You know, we obviously know that he likes Miami. He was in Miami recently, and it appears he's here, you know, every now and then. And, you know,
what did he want? Arroja la Cubana or something like that?
Listen, man, maybe he just came here for that. But again, that's, I mean, they should bring it to the pitch when they offer him that. But
get some takeout. What's the best Cuban joint in Miami? I don't know. I
guess La Carreta's the
obvious choice, right?
He knows.
Yeah.
But you got to really dig deep and find the best plate of food you could find and just be like, here, man. No, but I mean, Ibaka to me isn't that realistic either because of that. And because of that, I'm looking at like Millsap and Aaron Baines and guys like that. Just somebody, I think they don't necessarily need another big, but I think it would be nice because, you know, maybe you don't see the Lakers again ever. Like, who knows, right? Like, Heat Lakers might not be a matchup again. So it might not be smart to just worry about that. But at the end of the day, I do feel they could use another big. And even if you want to bring him off the bench, like, I do like the idea of the big playing next to Bam, whether if it's a guy like Ibaka, Millsap, or Baines who can kind of shoot a little bit and you can play them together for a little while and then play them apart as fives. But if you can't get a guy like that, if you go after another, you know, maybe a Tristan Thompson or a guy like that who you obviously can't play next to Bam, I think regardless, it would make sense to add another big, because it's tough when you bring in a small lineup with Kelly Olynyk as your center off the bench. And it's like, I really like Kelly and what he brings to the team, but it's just tough with the rim protection aspect. And it's like, when Bam went out in foul trouble, everything just falls apart. Like, I really like the talent on the team. I appreciate the what they bring to the team, but Bam is really the linchpin to their defense. Like, they need him. They need him so bad. And it's like, I think they need somebody else that you can throw in there where it's like, okay, Bam is in foul trouble, I could throw in an Ibaka or a Baines or a Millsap, and not just get completely mauled. And I know Olynyk is a good positional defender. He's got high IQ. He knows where to be. At the end of the day, you can't put it all on him, especially if he's playing alongside like wings and small guards like Goran and Hero, or not small, just guys who are not necessarily great defenders in their own aspect. Like, get somebody who you can play next to Kelly or Bam. And I think that would be a really good idea for them. And which is another reason why I think they should keep Crowder, because I think they'll be able to keep Crowder with Bird rights and still add somebody like a Baines or a Millsap with their mid-level. But again, I mean, I do understand what you're saying there regarding the 3 years. I wouldn't be surprised if they did retain Crowder and just went and started him again. Like, I do think they could play small all season, and I just think the switching stuff is a lot better for them, and I think they could go either way. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think they should commit to one way or the other. Like, I like them switching. I like them going big and kind of just giving teams fits on which one they're going to use. And especially in the playoffs, you know, which one are they going to commit to? I think this year was obvious. It's like, it's not going to be Myers Leonard and Kelly Olynyk that they're going to commit to. It's going to be their small ball guys. It's going to be Crowder and Iguodala, who they dealt for. I think next season, if you have a Millsap or a Baines or an Ibaka in the fold, it kind of makes it tougher to game plan against. It was like, okay, you know, they're going small, you know, they're going big. Then the Heat would have a little bit more variety if they got another big.
Well, I mean, those are all great points, but I mean, we're probably still going to have to find a way to replace Myers Leonard at the very least. And I don't know that any of the guys that we're talking about is willing to accept a lesser role. So to be honest with you, I mean, we're talking, I mean, Baines might be willing to come off the bench, but probably not.
I think you get those guys, and specifically maybe Millsap is the guy that you hone in on.
Yes.
And especially since it seems, you know, according to some reports out there, that he's willing to kind of take a little bit less money. And it seems like he was already, you know, people were already kind of putting him there around that mid-level exception price, which I believe that he'd have a $9.3
yes.
$3 million mid-level yeah. exception. And, you know, they don't have to use it all on him. Like, they could give like $6 or $7 million to him and use some on somebody else. I mean, you know, they could do a lot of different things, yeah. But at the end of the day, if Millsap is willing to take less, that makes it even better. Like, just somebody like that, I think Millsap, I think, would start on this team. I don't think they would bring him off the bench, or at least not right away. And I like somebody like that would obviously help for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I love Paul. He's been a great veteran. He's a guy who loves the work as well. Like, as from a fit perspective, it could be just as seamless as Jay Crowder's was in February. So I think that's a great fit on this team, a great addition. It'd be interesting if they could get somehow, if they could add a Millsap and if they could add a Crowder and re-sign him for a one-year deal, that would be great, because then, yes, you have a lot of different options that you can break out at different times. You know, you're going to have to rest. Yeah, they're going to have to rest players during this condensed season too. So that's something you definitely have to consider. You don't want to take any chances with Jimmy's health, and certainly not with Bam. And so you have to do everything you can to, you know, continue to capitalize on this short window that all of a sudden this team finds themselves. So I don't think they were expecting to be a title contender this quickly, but here they are, and they have to make the most of it. And certainly Bam Adebayo is going to be a big part of that. Thank you so much, Alex, for helping me break down this on the Exit Interview. Please tell my listeners where they can find you and all your great work.
Listen, I don't think anybody's going to want to look for me after this. Like, they probably tuned out halfway through, you know, all my thoughts. But at the end of the day, if you want to, you can find me at Tropical Blanket on Twitter. I'm on Five on the Floor. I'm occasionally on Miami Heat Beat. But yeah, I'm not expecting anybody to go look for me. But thank you for having me on for sure.
Yeah, if they're listening to this show, probably I'm sure they're following you and already know. If somehow somebody from the Philippines and from the New Zealand, I've got a big following in Australia. If they don't know about Tropical Blanket, they will by now. But I'll be continuing to bring you the latest rumors and news from around the league. And of course, looking ahead to the NBA drafts, we're a few weeks away. If you want to stay up to date, what better way to do that than by subscribing and following this podcast to get the latest episodes as soon as they're out. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you as always for your support.